And welcome to Backstage Pass, a spinoff of the Rock and Roll Survivors podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. I'm Kristen, and I'll be talking with music writers, podcasters, photographers, promoters, groupies, and so many others who love rock and roll. So here's your Backstage Pass. Let's get started. Welcome back, Madeline Beccaro, author of In Your Mind, The Infinite Universe of Yoko Ono. I have been singing this book's praises, singing your praises. I just think it is an exquisite piece of art, work, writing, and I encourage everybody to pick up a copy. You will keep it out and exposed because it's the kind of book that you just want to read all the time. So welcome back.
Thank you, Kristen. I appreciate that.
Oh, it's true. I always feel like I'm at a loss for words when I'm describing this book because it really is, it's very unique. It's very special. As I keep saying, you don't have to read it, you know, from beginning to end. And I think that speaks so much to your, I use this word a lot with you, homage, but it is this love letter to Yoko Ono because it's not a straightforward thought. It's wonderful. So we were talking last time about John and Yoko getting together, and there's some anti-Japanese sentiment going on. There's also a lot of Beatles fans who are not happy with the fact that the Beatles have broken up, and now John and Yoko are creating music that's not necessarily what the Beatles fans or John Lennon fans want. So I want you to set the stage for us for how they leave London and how they get to New York and those initial years, and then take us getting to the Dakota.
So they were living in London since 1971. They recorded the Imagine album there, and Yoko's first double album, Fly. They released them pretty much simultaneously. But they didn't like the expansiveness of the White Mansion, although it was beautiful. And it was kind of outside of London. And Yoko said, you know, I lived and worked in the city, in New York City for years, and you would love it. So John always wanted to go to New York and stay. So they came to New York, and John never returned to England. He didn't know he would not, but he never did. And they settle into the village, Greenwich Village, at Bank Street apartment. They conduct all their press interviews from bed, just like they did at the Bed Inn. They had a small apartment on ground level, and they entertained, you know, the media and celebrities. And they ended up meeting the radicals, Jerry Rubin and Abbie Hoffman, the Yippies. And they thought this was the coolest thing, singing with guitars in the street and, you know, speaking out against the war. And they make their Sometime in New York City album, which, just like Double Fantasy, was alternating songs between John and Yoko. And right there, they get a lot of flack because Yoko's on the album. But, you know, they didn't mind. They go on television shows, daytime television shows, Mike Douglas, and, you know, with these Abby and Jerry, and they're speaking about peace and war, and gets the attention of Richard Nixon, of course, because he's not too happy. And so they get together at Jerry Rubin's house for a party, expecting that, you know, their party is going to win the election, but Nixon wins. And this is November 72, after a concert they did in New York City with the album, and it ended up getting panned, and John was devastated. But it was I was there, okay? There were two concerts, a matinee and an evening show, and they were great. The audience loved it. It was incredible. He did Come Together, some Beatles songs. He did stuff from his first solo album. Yoko did her songs. It was spectacular, and it gets panned. So they shelved a tour that they were going to do. John was very depressed about it. Nixon wins the election. He goes ballistic, and he cheats on Yoko right there in the apartment with another girl in the next room. So that was it for Yoko. She just said, well, we need a separation. They were together 24/7 since they were married, since before they were married. And they just, you know, she said, that's it. I can't go on like this. So she arranges for their secretary of several years, May Pang. She's a young girl. She was 22. She's very trustworthy, very capable, smart girl. And she said, look, John is going to be separate from me for a while, and I want you to take care of him. Now, May's version of this is Yoko said, "I want you to sleep with my husband." But I don't know what words were said, but basically Yoko wanted John to be with someone who he knew she knew he was going to sleep with women, and she'd rather it be one woman who wasn't going to write a tell-all, about how they did it, whatever. So May was very capable. She always booked their studio time. She handled the money. She's a brilliant girl, and John had never written a check in his life, so he needed someone. So she said, "Go with May." So he did. And first, they were in New York a little while, and John gets the idea, "Let's go to LA," because his musician buddies were out there. But they were Keith Moon, Harry Nilsson, the notorious drinkers, and he ended up drinking with them and getting crazier and crazier and calling Yoko every day, asking, "When can I come back?" And Yoko kept saying, "You're not ready, you're not ready." And they were on the phone hours and hours every day, which May didn't like. But, this was their connection. They couldn't be apart. So things came to a head in LA, and John comes back, and thanks to May, he came back alive, we'll say, right? Who knows what path he might have gone down. And when he gets back, he goes back to Yoko.
Well, this is just a complete aside, but the woman that he slept with while Yoko was in the other room, did he come out and confess it? Did Yoko already know it was happening?
Oh, they he she heard the screaming. She heard it, and it was obvious a jab at, everything in life that he just wanted to do this.
Wow. And the screaming takes on a different meaning with also when you're
Right. There you
screaming.
go.
There's wow, that's incredible. And did this woman ever write a tell-all?
No, she didn't.
So do we know who she is?
I kind of know, but she's remaining quiet, so let her be,
Good for no, good for her for remaining quiet, actually. That's incredible. So the two, so John and Yoko can't keep, keep apart, and they reconcile. Is this are they this is Yoko and John had already been at the Dakota. It's just that John is now moving back in. Am I getting that correct?
Right. They had briefly lived there, and she sent John away, and then he comes back to the Dakota. And the whole stipulation for the return and the reunion of John and Yoko was that Yoko said, "He has to court me. We have to date again. He's not just going to come and move back in." And the person who facilitated this, which not many people know, and nobody knew until 2010 when Yoko came out and said it, was Paul McCartney. He visited Yoko, and he said, "Listen, what's going on with you two? Do you still love each other? Can I do anything? Can I help?" And she said, "He has to court me. He has to buy me flowers. He has to start over." And he said, "Okay." And he went to John in LA, and he said, "Look, this is what she said." And John came back, and he did just that.
Well, the line just like starting over now takes on a whole new meaning from Double Fantasy.
Right.
That's incredible. I love knowing that. I love that he was supportive of that. I mean, I think you used the word that Paul McCartney and Yoko Ono had a complex relationship. And I'm actually not surprised at that at all with those two thinkers as well. I think any human person with intellectual thoughts like that would be complex. But he not only wrote "Hey Jude" for her in part, saying "Go be together," but now he was the one that was working on bringing them back together.
Right. And Yoko said, Paul, she and Paul have so much in common. They're the people that John loved most in the world. And, they're dealing with the Beatles business, which is so chaotic and intense, and trying to agree on legal matters. And she just says that she and Paul share the same amount of pain. Also, they both lost John. So she said, "I sympathize with Paul. People think we're privileged people. We don't feel pain. But look what they both went through."
Wow, it's beautiful. So during this time of reconciliation, they're at the Dakota, and John is basically raising Sean while Yoko is doing her artwork. But he comes out of, or you can tell it in a much better way, but he comes out of this kind of dry spell of making music, and the two of them together create Double Fantasy. So,
Right.
speak to me a little bit about how this album came together and what they were hoping to achieve with it.
Well, while John was taking care of Sean, Yoko was not doing her art. She sublimated all of that so that she could grow John's financial empire because it was in shambles. He had given away a lot of money. Apple Records gave away a lot of money, and the publishing was in question. And she was meeting with lawyers day after day after day. But coming from a banking background, her father was a banker. Her sister took over the business. She somehow, and she didn't like doing it, but she was able to, and she did build his net worth into like a fortune. And then while he was in LA, she was doing a tour of Japan. So she wasn't, stagnant while he was away either. She went on recording, and she was probably going to go back and do some more art, but that's when he returned. So she built the finances back up, and now they're in a better position as a family. And Sean is now 5, and John feels that, okay, well, he's starting to get these little musical inspirations while he was away in the Bahamas, and he hears the B-52s on the radio, and he hears them sounding like Yoko vocally. And he calls her up and he says, "Oh my God, they're doing you. Maybe this is the time for us now." And they start recording Double Fantasy.
Wow, that's incredible. I did not know that about the B-52s and that connection. I just think that's incredible. And so Double Fantasy, if I remember correctly, I loved it when it came out. I was 13 when it came out, but it was very well received, or at
It
least
was.
the
It
fans.
wasn't. It wasn't. Beatles people were thrilled, but guess what? At the time, it was still a little bit disco-y and punky on the charts, and it wasn't. It was kind of from left field having this, music from an ex-Beatle that hadn't done anything in decades. So people were kind of warming up to it, but it didn't really start picking up until after he passed, which was only 3 weeks after it came out.
Which I don't think a lot of people realize how quick it was. I mean, between the album coming out and then the famous photo shoot for Rolling Stone, where he's naked, hugging Yoko Ono,
It was
and
on that same day that he was killed.
which
Bam.
is, yep, and that was December 8th, 1980. And of course, anybody who was alive and a fan of the Beatles has their own historical memory of where they were. But this is about Yoko Ono, and you know her. And you have written so intimately about her. So tell us what it was like for Yoko to go through that horrific loss, as well as talk about Season of Glass.
So, December 1980, when he was killed, we only know this because she's told us. Like, she never told anyone personally, but she tells the world how she's feeling all the time. And she said that first thing she did was have a vigil for John, 10 minutes silence in Central Park and around the strawberry fields that she created as a beautiful garden for John. And later. So this 10-minute silence, and there's this beautiful snowfall just for the 10 minutes, and then it stops. It's just an incredible thing. And that was instead of a funeral because she didn't want anything heavy like that. And then the only reason she said that she could go on at all without just giving up was that she had Sean to raise. So she delved back into music right away. She finished the song Walking on This Thin Ice, which they had been working on the night he was killed. He had the tape in his hand. It fell on the sidewalk. This is what he was obsessed with playing over and over the night before. So she finished the song, and on the sleeve of the single, she writes, "I finished it. I hope it's okay, John. I hope it's what you wanted." And, there's a in the studio, he's saying, "I think you've got your first number one, Yoko." And at the beginning of the song, she put that in there. And then decades later, it actually happened on the dance charts. It was a number one hit. So that was that. And then a year later, she released Season of Glass, which is so beautiful and, of course, heartbreaking. But a lot of those songs were written in 1974 for a second part of an album that was going to be a double album. And it was going to be called Half a Wind Song. And it didn't come out, part of it came out as under the name A Story later on. And some of those songs are on A Story. And it's just amazing that, given the lyrics, they're just so prescient, from 1974. The B-side of Walking on Thin Ice even was called It Happened. And it's a very somber song, and it happened at a time of my life when I least expected. I don't even remember how it happened. I don't remember the day it happened, and there's no return, no way. But a lot of the songs on Season were older songs, and they're very, very prescient. And there's a whole chapter in the book called Premonitions about these things, not just lyrics, but things that both John and Yoko felt or heard from a psychic or in their own course of life that it were really little warnings in a way.
Which I think is a perfect way of letting the listeners know that that's why your book is so profound and so important for people to read. Because, I mean, we could, if you want to give me 100 hours, I could just read your book. Okay. It's just so wonderful. But for those who don't know about Season of Glass, also talk about the cover and the artwork of the photograph that she took.
So the photograph is John Lennon's glasses that fell off his face the night he was killed. They're full of blood, and they're on a windowsill that looks out over Central Park. And everything in the photograph is glass, and it's transparent. She has a half full glass of water there, his glasses looking through a glass window, and she wanted to get the New York City skyline in there, but she couldn't. So she got the park that they always looked over and that he loved so much. And that was her statement. It's just like, look what was done to John. I had to see it in reality, and here, look what you've done. It's not just the shooter that killed John. John and Yoko spent most of their lives trying to stay together while the whole world was trying to separate them. They spent all their energy trying to link together. And they were broken apart once in 1974, and they were broken apart for good in 1980.
And as we've talked about, but I think it bears repeating, this was 12 years of their lives together. And she is 91 this year.
Yes.
It's an incredibly, to use your word, heartbreaking, but beautiful love story. I mean, it's just absolutely beautiful. So before we close out this episode, and we're going to finish up with next week's episode, I want you to tell everybody where they can get this incredible book. But before you do, is there any final thoughts that you want to speak to about Yoko's mourning of John since his passing and what she's tried to do with it? I mean, she has such a theme in her life, like you said, having jabs of acupuncture, but turning it into something positive. So Season of Glass was obviously a very personal moment for her. But also saying to the world, see what you've done. But is there any other memory you want to speak to?
Well, her next album was called It's All Right, and that was sort of a mantra to come out of the pain. And music was such a catharsis for her. She went on to make several more albums, and it was 10 years before she got back into her artwork again, and that helped a lot more. But there's no way you can imagine what she went through. I mean, eventually, she was beginning to smile and laugh again. But how much psychological tricks she had to play on herself in order to sublimate those feelings and really be able to function, let alone, be happy again. So, yeah, I mean, she's a survivor, and she's just very logical and practical in her own philosophies, Zen Buddhism. Just simplifying thoughts, turning everything into a positive, putting value on things that are important, respecting nature. These things all helped her. to heal and grow.
Well, and I think that's why the title of your book, In Your Mind, The Infinite Universe of Yoko Ono, is just like everything else of your work. It's just perfect because she does. She's in her mind, but she uses it and explores it in a way that I just find captivating and inspiring. So tell all of
She
us.
encourages us to do the same.
I'm sorry, I cut you off. Say that again.
She encourages us to do the same with our minds.
Which is again such a gift, and she just does continue to give in so many different ways. Just beautiful. So tell us where we can find this incredible book.
So the book is on Amazon for those of you internationally for shipping reasons. You probably get Prime free, whatever. In the States, the best place to get it is through me at conceptualbooks.com. You get the soft cover or the hard cover with the option of it being signed by me. And it's on BookBaby also.
Wonderful. And what about your writing blog?
Oh, I have a blog that's called madelinex.com, and it's all my other music writings from memories from when I was a teenager, concert reviews that I'd gone to. I wrote everything down the night after the concerts, right? So I have all these great memories, all these anniversary retrospectives of albums 20th, 30th, 40th, 50th, 60th, a lot of Beatles writings, a lot of Yoko stuff, and yeah, but a lot of different artists. It's extensive blog. I've been doing it since 2002. People love it.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, you're prolific, you're extraordinary, and I love your talents, and I can't wait to talk to you on the next episode. So, until then,